I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, a look at net neutrality. Last month, the FCC did away with regulations put in place during the Obama administration that guaranteed a level playing field on the internet. Big cable companies, telecom companies, and mobile carriers will be able to play favorites to a certain extent when it comes to which information flows quickly and which flows more slowly or not at all. Companies like Amazon and Netflix could pay more to speed up your access to their sites. Smaller websites would be relegated to the slow lane. Are you okay with that? My guests, Brandi Collins from Color of Change, Professor Ritu Agarwal from the University of Maryland's Smith School of Business, and Deb Tillett from the Baltimore Tech Incubator, ETC. What's next for the net? That's coming up on Midday, right after the news. Good afternoon, everybody. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad you're with us. Net neutrality is our topic today. Last month, Ajit Pai, the Trump-appointed chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, made good on a promise to repeal Obama-era regulations that governed the internet. By a vote of 3-2, the commission ended regulations that required internet service providers to treat all content the same. Before, ISPs couldn't pick and choose which content loaded fast and which loaded more slowly or even not at all, nor could they change or charge, rather, a premium for faster service. So why is this important? Net neutrality advocates say that the inequality that is so pervasive in so much of our society shouldn't be extended to the internet. That we shouldn't, in other words, provide fast internet to those who can afford to pay and slow service to everybody else. But those who support the FCC's decision argue that the old regulations were unnecessary and that the government shouldn't micromanage the internet. They say that less regulation will spur investment. So what do you think? Should the internet operate according to market forces, or should it be treated as a basic utility and accessible to all on the same terms? Our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday at wipr.org. And in the Twittersphere, you can find us at Midday Tom Hall. My guests today have given this subject a lot of thought. Deb Tillett joins me here in Studio A. She's the executive director of the Emerging Technologies Center. That's an incubator for tech startups here in Baltimore. Hey, Deb, nice to see you.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
And Brandi Collins is the senior campaign director for Color of Change, the nation's largest online racial justice organization. She oversees that organization's media, democracy, and economic justice department. She's on the line from Oakland, California. Ms. Collins, welcome.
Thank you.
And Ritu Agarwal is a professor, senior associate dean for research, and the dean's chair of information systems at the University of Maryland Robert H. Smith School of Business. She is also the founder and director of the school's Center for Health Information and Decision Systems. She joins us from her office in College Park. Professor, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, Deb Tillett, let me start with you. What is net neutrality? Sort of how would you define it? What's it mean?
That's a big question, but for me, I think it's as easy as a level playing field. And what that means is that all of us, regardless of who we are, how much money we make, or where we live, have the same access to the internet. And you said it first. You said basic utility, and that's a firm belief of mine that not unlike electricity, water, although we've got issues with both of those, I think that internet and basic internet is a utility.
And Ritu Agarwal, the regulations that they're proposing to change, and they haven't actually gone into effect at this moment, but they're on the way to be changed, it looks like. How would it change specifically? What would be different under the new rules as opposed to the old ones?
Tom, first of all, it's Ritu and not Rita. It's
forgive me. Forgive me. I apologize. That's right. Ritu, I apologize. You're right. Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. So, you know, what the repeal of the old law is essentially doing is it is unleveling the playing field, if I may riff off what Deb said. So now, depending on your ability to pay, you could be charged a different rate for your access to the internet. But I think more importantly, it's not just for people who are accessing the internet, but it's for all those companies, all those entrepreneurs who are providing content on the internet. And they could be charged differential prices to be able to communicate their content at particular speeds. They might be given preferential treatment if they're able to pay more. So in some sense, you can think of the small companies, the entrepreneurs who don't have deep pockets, as being disadvantaged under the new rules because they wouldn't be able to pay enough for their content to be streamed at the speeds that they want it to be streamed.
And Brandi Collins, the social and racial implications of this are something that you've concentrated a lot on. One of the things is that so much of the media business is concentrated in just a handful of companies. So they putatively would stand to benefit greatly from this, while so many other smaller companies and individuals would not. How does that play into this conversation?
Yeah, completely. I mean, as you mentioned, Tom, 90% of the media is owned by just six corporations, which means that's six corporations determining what we see, what we hear, that define what it means to be a person of color. When I think about Color of Change, we started in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina because we saw all the ways in which media, corporate, and government systems had let down poor folks and black folks in particular, and we saw that the biggest challenge to achieving justice and equity was shifting assumptions that underline the issues. And so being able to challenge predominant media narratives, being able to put our voices on the forefront and organize for equity and having net neutrality, which is essentially the free speech principle online, has been critical to being able to do that.
So how would the free speech of you as an individual or your organization corporately be affected by this? Is this a matter of actually controlling to some extent what is said and who says it on the internet?
Yeah, well, absolutely. By deregulating the internet, it really allows for, as you talked about earlier, for certain corporations to pay more in order to speed up content. It also allows for blocking and throttling of content, or the net neutrality principle was protection from blocking and throttling of content. And we've seen different examples of the past when the net neutrality rules have been a little more loose, an ability to do that. So absolutely, without those rules in place and with corporations just saying, trust us when their motivation is the bottom dollar and not whether or not anyone is able to speak truth to power, we think that that's absolutely wrong and could have devastating impacts for our community.
And Deb Tillett?
I was just going to say it's as simple as some things that are happening now, but if you're a large media company and someone wants to advertise with you, but it isn't an advertisement that's going to be particularly flattering to you, you don't have to take that, right? You don't have to have that content that might be unfavorable to you exposed or on the air.
And Ritu Agarwal, these terms that Brandi Collins was talking about, blocking and throttling, would you give us a little dictionary.com deal here and tell us what blocking and throttling means in terms of the internet?
Yeah, essentially that content is not allowed to flow over the internet pipes. And the media companies make the decision about what specific information they will not relay. Every time we access the internet and we send a message or we access a site, we have we believe that our message is going to get across without anybody stopping it on the way, and people are not going to stop it based on what the content of that message is. Just like when we make a phone call, we don't expect our carrier to stop the call because of what we're saying. So that's exactly the same principle around blocking and throttling. You could do it in a variety of different ways. I mean, you could slow speeds down up to the point where the internet user gets frustrated and then just moves on to another site. So there's lots of clever technology-related ways of doing that.
So, Deb Tillett, obviously a company like AT&T or Comcast or something isn't going to be caught red-handed saying, we're not letting this message go through, we are letting this message go through. I mean, I wouldn't imagine that they would want that to be, something that they were doing overtly. But is what Ritu Agarwal is saying, the way they would do it is just simply by making it so slow sure. You know, bringing us back to the era of, you know, phone hookups instead of broadband, that they could just make it impossible for people to hang with it.
I mean, sure, and you wouldn't be able to stand it. And I was going to save this to the end, but here's my perfect example. Think about it as you think about electricity, right? When you walk into your house at night in the dark and you flip the switch, you think, the light's going to go on. I know where I'm going. Well, what if you didn't pay enough and you flipped the switch and it took 45 minutes or it took 45 seconds even, and you're standing there in the dark and you can't find your way even through your own house? That's essentially what we're talking about with this, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And you know, it's that is so oversimplified, just like the Whopper commercial, but it's absolutely what they're talking about.
Yeah, we're going to hear a little bit of this Whopper commercial in a little bit. But Brandi Collins, the argument that the FCC Chairman Pai has made is that the net neutrality regulations put in place in 2015 were, number one, unnecessary. The market was doing a perfectly fine job of it before. It didn't seem that anything was getting suppressed before. And number two, he says that investment in the internet and speeding it up and making it more accessible slowed down after those regulations were put in place in 2015. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think both of those things are inaccurate. First, I want to take a step back to this question of, would these corporations be sort of caught red-handed blocking or slowing down content? And the truth is they already have. In 2005, Comcast began secretly blocking peer-to-peer technologies that customers were using over their network. That was information that was uncovered by the Electronic Frontier Foundation. AT&T in 2007 through 2009 forced Apple to block Skype and other competing VoIP phone services on the iPhone. There's a long stream of violations in which they've already had. And the interesting part about Pai saying that the 2015 rules would slow down investment is that wasn't true either. In fact, Comcast had record-level investment that we saw over this two-year period that these net neutrality rules were in play. And so all of these business arguments that have been thrown out there are red herrings and disingenuous at best.
Professor Agarwal, do you agree with that? I mean, the chairman did say in a piece in the Wall Street Journal that it depressed investment in building and expanding broadband networks, and it deterred innovation. It went down 5.6%. How do you respond to the chairman's data there?
Yeah, I agree with Brandi that, you know, this is completely a red herring with respect to innovation. I mean, let's go back and ask the question, what innovation are we talking about? There's innovation that the internet service providers will do, and they're certainly incentivized by their business models to do that. But the real innovation in the economy is coming from the hundreds of thousands of entrepreneurs who are looking at the internet as a way of launching the next disruptive business. If we disadvantage these people from the get-go by charging them high prices, then, you know, as an economy, we're going to miss out on enormous waves of innovation, in my opinion. So I don't buy this argument that it's going to stifle innovation. In fact, the rules stifle innovation. In fact, I would argue exactly the opposite, that its repeal stifles innovation.
Let's see if we can sneak in a phone call before we go to a break. Wolf in Fort Meade, thanks for calling Midday. Welcome to the show.
Hey, my name's Wolf. I come from a smaller town in Texas originally, and in places like that, we only had two internet options, so you couldn't call it a monopoly, of course. One of them being a satellite version, which was borderline unusable. So in situations like that, in towns like that, you get one company that now has all the power and can do whatever they want and without the net neutrality.
All right. Well, Deb Tillett, is that the same thing, the access to an internet service provider in general in a town? I mean, as I understand it, and I may be wrong about this, you can correct me, one can't get Verizon Fios in the city of Baltimore, right?
That is true. I have tried.
We can only get Comcast and regular Verizon stuff. So we are limited here, even in the city of Baltimore. We are not a small town in Texas.
That's very true. And I think that it is very, very frustrating sometimes for folks here in the city of Baltimore that the access to broadband, which again, I go back to saying is and needs to be a utility, has still got its issues. I was excited that there were pamphlets along my street that Verizon Fios was going to be available, except when you call, the city limits are where I live, and it was not available. And
that's because of a decision that the city made to have a contract with another
provider? It's very complicated, but I think it is city by city, and they choose who their service provider is, and there's a lot bundled into that. But if you go back to what some of Ritu was saying, the innovation piece, I think, is critical to what we're talking about. But for reasonable and, at the time, 04, 05, 06 internet speeds, and a couple of guys in a dorm room in Harvard, we would not have Facebook today, right? So if you bring it fast forward to 2018, those same people, guys, gals, are sitting in dorm room right now thinking up things to disrupt the world that without net neutrality, they could be blocked.
All right. Well, we've got to disrupt our conversation for about 90 seconds. Deb Tillett is the executive director of Emerging Technologies Center. That's an incubator for tech startups in Highlandtown. Brandi Collins is an attorney and the senior campaign director for Color of Change. She oversees Color of Change's Media, Democracy, and Economic Justice Department. And Professor Ritu Agarwal is professor at the University of Maryland's Smith School of Business. More on net neutrality when we come back from a break. We'll take your calls, your comments, your questions. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. And to find us on Twitter, @MiddayTomHall. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, it's the Midday Health Watch with Baltimore City Health Commissioner Dr. Lena Nguyen. We'll talk about a number of issues in public health that are front of mind, including the effect that the tax reform package will have on the Affordable Care Act, now that the individual mandate to purchase health insurance has been eliminated. That's coming up tomorrow. Dr. Lena Nguyen with me here on Midday. If you're just joining us today, we're talking about the internet and how fast it will work for companies and individuals now that the FCC is preparing to remove the Obama-era regulations regarding so-called net neutrality. Here's a clip from a video you may have seen. About 4 million folks have seen it so far. It's only been up for a few days. This is posted on YouTube by Burger King.
Got a number one?
Hey,
how you doing?
Do you know what number 98, what's going on with it?
Number 98, you got the Whopper?
Yeah.
So you got the slow access Whopper pass?
Wait, what?
It's on the menu right there with the fast, medium, and slow. Slow Mbps, fast Mbps, or hyper fast Mbps. Mbps, of course, standing for making burgers per second.
So if we want a Whopper now, we have to pay $26?
Well, that's how you get it fast. That's the highest priority.
This is like a lane system?
It's maybe like 15, yeah, fast lane, slow lane. So like maybe like 15, 20 minutes.
What are you talking about?
The sandwich is ready. I'm just not allowed to actually give it to you.
What? You can't give me the sandwich? It's ready, but you can't give it to me?
The Whopper neutrality was repealed. They voted on it.
Whopper what?
This doesn't make any sense.
Fortunately, I have no other choice.
Oh, my God. This is the worst thing I've ever heard of.
Whopper neutrality. Burger King weighing in on the net neutrality conversation. That's the conversation we're having today here on Midday. My guests are Professor Ritu Agarwal from the University of Maryland, who joins us on the line from her office in College Park, Deb Tillett, heads Emerging Technologies Center, that's an incubator for tech startups in Highlandtown here in Baltimore, and Brandy Collins oversees the Media, Democracy, and Economic Justice Department at Color of Change, an online racial justice organization. You are welcome to join our conversation about net neutrality. How do you feel about the fact that your net may cost more if you want it to go fast and cost less if you want it, or if you don't care, if it goes slow? 410-662-8780, or email midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. So Brandy Collins, the chairman of the FCC, Mr. Pai, says that one of the things that will change is that we're going to require internet service providers to be transparent so that consumers can buy the plan that's best for them. We heard the same kind of rhetoric in the healthcare debate. Let the people buy the plan that's best for them. Of course, that strikes me as, well, the plan that's best for them is the best plan out there, you know, and if that's going to cost too much money, that's a whole other thing. But how do you respond to the fact that the chairman is saying that this is a matter of free choice? This is a freedom of choice issue.
Well, I want to kind of also take a step back and really frame that this principle, the net neutrality principle, is so important to so many pieces of communications and how they impact our lives. So to the person earlier that talked about rural communities, 39% of rural communities lack broadband, and over 10 million households do not have access to broadband at all. And we see this, like, in communities, in rural communities, providers offering a low Mbps speeds, which we heard about in the Burger King commercial. Poor broadband is correlated with lower population growth, less economic development, less access to education. Having the free speech principle or having net neutrality actually allows for the FCC to govern all sorts of things, not just around broadband access, but around privacy and around lifelines, so people's abilities to have access to phone and internet in low-income communities. So all of this is tied together. And again, when the FCC commissioner talks about we're going to let you have it your way and give you all the options, that's simply not true. And it's an argument that he keeps making that's sort of built on this idea of trickle-down economics, or this idea that if we let the corporations do whatever they want to do, that's going to get kicked back down to the least those of us that have the least. And when have we ever seen that be successful? It hasn't. And we won't see it be successful now.
Yeah. And Ritu Agarwal, the chairman wrote in an article in the Wall Street Journal right before the vote took place last December to change the net neutrality rules, talked about the burdensome regulations which has failed consumers and businesses alike in the 2 years after the FCC's decision. In other words, from 2015 through when it was changed in December 2017. Again, he says network investment dropped more than 5.6%, and that's the first time a decline has happened outside of a recession. And he's saying that if the current rules are left in place, millions of Americans who are on the wrong side of the digital divide would have to wait years to get more broadband. Do you understand that argument, Professor? How is that? This is basically just completely 180 degrees different than what the three of you are telling me now.
Yeah, I have difficulty with Mr. Pai's argument, to be quite honest. I think there's a lot of hyperbole and, you know, some misinformation in the comments that he's making. You know, we have the internet service provision is an industry with very high barriers to entry, right? So it's expensive for somebody to become an internet service provider. Having said that, we have a lot of power that's concentrated in three or four big companies, Comcast, AT&T, and Verizon. So in some sense, unless we want to let these giants grow larger and larger and create more of a winner-take-all dynamic, we have to step in and say, okay, let's let some small internet service providers come in so that there's more competition in the rural areas. I don't think we are going to see a decline in investment in infrastructure. In fact, we might even see an upswing in investment once these large companies have a little bit of power taken away from them. And I think this question, you know, to Brandy's earlier point, needs to be framed in the broader context of what the internet means for the economy, for society, and for business. There are transactions, both economic and social, being conducted, you know, every millisecond of the day. And if we take away the ability of rural America to conduct those transactions at acceptable speeds, then essentially we are, you know, we're simply making the digital divide even broader and bigger. So I don't think it's going to solve the digital divide. If anything, it'll make it worse.
You're listening to Midday. We're talking net neutrality. I'm Tom Hall. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. And our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. My guests are Professor Ritu Agarwal from the University of Maryland, Brandy Collins from Color of Change, who joins us on the phone from Oakland, California, and Deb Tillett. She's the executive director of the Emerging Technologies Center. That's an incubator here in Baltimore. Let's go to the phones and invite Joseph from Sparrows Point to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Hey, how are you? Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
I do, sir. You're on the air. Okay. What's on your mind?
Yeah. So, you know, they're saying that, you know, net neutrality would diminish investment in the networks. And I don't know if that's so much of a red herring. I think we kind of just have to read between the lines, because it only makes sense that if they can't do whatever they want to do, then there goes their motivation to continue to invest more. So if you take net neutrality, you know, out of the way, that opens the door for them to make exorbitant profits. And so I would think it only makes sense that they would not invest as much, as long as there were some restrictions that kept the playing field somewhat level. And if I could make one quick comment, why are we so afraid to step away from these technologies? You know, not altogether. I mean, you know, we can still use them to come up with our own ways to do things. But why is there such a reluctance for the public to step away from these technologies, to put them down, and essentially remove the life source, which is our money paying for their service, and so that we can, as a people, develop other things in better ways for us to be able to get these things done?
Well, Joseph, that may be something of a utopian view, that fewer of us are going to use the internet. That's a separate issue. But Deb Tillett, to Joseph's contention that right now companies like AT&T and Verizon and Comcast have no motivation, they have no incentive to invest further in broadband access or performance because of these net neutrality regulations that have been in place. How do you respond to that?
Well, I just think that that's blatantly not true. I mean, these companies are at the top of their game. There are three, maybe four max, arguably the biggest, some of the largest companies, not just in this country, but globally. And it's in their best interest to continue to make investments and understand technology. Technology changes so fast. And if they're not keeping ahead of technologies as they are, there will be a little guy somewhere that comes along and does something that is so innovative and meaningful that pops them out of the way. So it's in their own best interest, regardless of whether or not they can charge more, to continue to be there and the provider that they are currently. So I think that they will continue to invest, and we've seen it in other large companies.
And Brandy Collins, where do the courts stand on this? I think the FCC anticipates that there will be legal challenges to this decision by the commission, but where do things stand as we speak?
Yeah, so there's already been some legal challenges throughout the history. The first time that the FCC tried to put down kind of watered down rules into place, this went to the courts and they were overturned, not because the court was overturning net neutrality rules, but because they said you have to make a decision whether or not you're going to consider the internet something that can be regulated like a utility. And until then, the rules that were previously set could not hold up. So the FCC went back. They took a lot of time, talked to a lot of lawyers, came up with the rules that we saw in 2015 that actually have held up to legal scrutiny in court. And I want to like speak a little bit more as well to the gentleman's point as far as stepping away from technology. The reason why it is so important that the internet does get treated as a utility is because we've kind of, because the internet has expanded in such a quick time, people take it for granted and still somewhat treat it as a luxury. I know when I graduated law school, I didn't even have an email address, or at least one that wasn't associated with the school. So in a very short period of time, the internet has become so ubiquitous. But you can't even apply for a job at the gas station without having access to the internet. We've gone to communities like Skid Row in Los Angeles where people have spoken very eloquently to how much they've needed to have the internet. They've made comments like the internet is like our home address when we don't have a physical one. It is absolutely, it's how people get medical care. It's how people access all sorts of services. And so in an ideal world, we would be able to not leave this in corporate hands and say we're going to step away from the internet. But it really is a public utility and should be treated as such, and the court has found the same.
And Professor Agarwal, there is a bill that has just gotten enough sponsors to be able to be at least putatively taken to the floor. Senator Markey from Massachusetts has found 30 people to co-sponsor a bill that would attempt to overturn the vote by the Federal Communications Commission. Where does that stand, and how would you handicap the chances of Congress actually overturning this commission ruling?
You know, at this point, I'd say there's about a 50-50 chance that it will get overturned. I know the Congressional Review Act process is being used as one mechanism to overturn it. You know, I also want to kind of just make the point here that in some sense, the United States, in its repeal of net neutrality, is sort of going against what the rest of the world is doing. I mean, a couple of weeks back, I recall that both the UK and France reaffirmed their commitment to net neutrality, essentially arguing that their entire economy was going to be built around the digital infrastructure provided by the internet, and they felt that a free and open internet was absolutely critical to that. So, you know, to this whole point about should this be a utility and should be regulated, should it be regulated as such, I would say absolutely. And, you know, net neutrality does not imply price fixing. The FCC has never interfered and said, you know, what can you charge for internet service? It's basically said, look, you have to provide access to everybody, and you have to make everybody's content available on the internet, regardless of what it is. I think that's absolutely key.
And Deb Tillett, tell us what things were like before the Obama regulations went into effect. I mean, again, the chairman of the FCC talks about those regulations, which were put into effect in 2015, haven't been in effect all that long, you know, got rid of the longstanding consensus that market forces should dictate how the internet operates. Prior to 2015, were we in a situation where free speech was being attenuated, where access was really terrible in rural areas, I mean, and not making any progress whatsoever, investment was down? Are any of the things that he's identified as things that will be fixed under this new ruling, what was the, take us back to the old, the halcyon days of, you know, 2014, what was going on then?
The same thing and better and more of what's happening now. I think I've seen absolutely no difference except, you know, even then, it started then, we were investing in more high-speed internet, right? So things were getting faster, and it was important that we increased the speeds. And that was pre-2015. So, I mean, if you look at the times, especially as I took over at ETC from 2012 through 2015, there was nothing but progress and nothing but faster speeds. So I'm not sure what he's trying to get at with this, you know, sense that things are going to change.
Paul sends us a tweet that says an SEC filing, that's the Securities and Exchange Commission, during the short era of net neutrality show no impact on investments in infrastructure.
Thanks for bailing me out.
Yeah, that's the SEC.
I really appreciate that.
All right, we are going to take a little break. Brandi Collins is an attorney who oversees the Media, Democracy, and Economic Justice Department at Color of Change. Professor Ritu Agarwal is on the faculty of the University of Maryland's Smith School of Business. And Deb Tillett is here with me in the studio. She's the executive director of ETC Emerging Technologies Center. That's an incubator for tech startups. When we come back, we're going to talk about the impact in particular on startup businesses and small, you know, mom and pop businesses, restaurants, car washes, small stores. We'll talk about the impact on them in particular when we come back. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. So before we take our little break, it's our custom on Mondays here on Midday to read the names of the people who've lost their lives to violence in Baltimore during the previous week. We stand in witness to their untimely deaths, and we remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. So far in 2018, 23 people in Baltimore City have lost their lives to violence. One victim died the week before last, but his name was not listed by police as a homicide until last week. He is Juan Henderson, and he was 47 years old. There were 8 victims of homicide in Baltimore last week. 4 have yet to be identified by police. They are men who were 51, 29, 26, and 24 years old, respectively. 4 other people were killed in Baltimore last week as well. They are Travis Wallace, age 30, Darone Johnson, age 27, Sean Dyer, age 34, and Micaiah Dyer. She was 29 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we're talking about net neutrality. What will it mean to have different levels of service for large corporations and everybody else? My guests are Deb Tillett, the executive director of a local startup incubator called Emerging Technologies Center. Brandi Collins is the senior campaign director for Color of Change. They're the largest online racial justice organization in the country. Ms. Collins oversees Color of Change's Media, Democracy, and Economic Justice Department. And Professor Ritu Agarwal is a professor at the University of Maryland in College Park. She's the Dean's Chair of Information Systems at the Robert H. Smith School of Business. Our phone number here on the program, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. And to find us on Twitter, our handle is @MiddayTomHall. Brandi Collins, you write that the number of black women-owned businesses has grown exponentially, something like over 320% over the last few years. And many of these businesses are small businesses getting off the ground. Tell us specifically how they are going to be affected by this rules change by the FCC.
Yes, I mean, I think it's, you know, again, as was spoken to earlier, this ability to create fast and slow lanes and charge a certain amount of money, I think, has a devastating impact on smaller businesses who aren't even able to get out of the gate. We've talked again and again about innovation and the importance of the internet in that. Historically, we've seen a lot of doors closed to young, poor, rural, black, and brown and women business owners because they may not be able to go in and get traditional loans or open brick-and-mortar businesses. To be able to start their businesses online, that has been a critical piece to this 320% plus growth that we've seen with black women in the last 20 years in the era of the internet. And to not even and to say that there's more cost to put more barriers and more doors to that to those business opportunities, we absolutely think that that would have a negative impact on the type of innovation that we've heard Deb and the professor speak to over the course of the hour.
And Ritu Agarwal, when it comes to who pays for this, the companies, the ISPs, are able to charge certain people more money to have their information flow faster.
That's an accurate way of putting it, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, if Comcast or Verizon charges, say, Amazon to stream their movies faster than they're currently streaming, who pays for that? Does Amazon pay for that and then simply pass it on to Amazon customers? Does Netflix pay for that and pass it on to its customers? I mean, who are they actually charging? Are they charging me as a Netflix subscriber for that service, or are they charging Netflix, who in turn charges me because their costs just went up?
They could decide to do it either way, or they could split the cost. So, they could charge Amazon all of it for streaming their movies faster, and then eventually Amazon may end up charging its consumers more for its streaming service or its Prime membership or whatever the case might be, because they want to pass on some of the cost to the consumer. So exactly how the costs will be shared across all of the players of the ecosystem is something that will work out over time. But costs will definitely go up. And, you know, to Brandy's point, the people who are going to get marginalized in this entire story are the ones who don't have the deep pockets to pay for it. So the small entrepreneurs, the small businesses, perhaps the rural customers who are not used to, paying skyrocketing prices for broadband internet. And particularly because the market in those communities, the provider market in those communities, is so fragmented. Sometimes there's no competition at all. You know, I think we have to look at this in the broader context of what the internet means for people who are getting access to basic services through the internet, right? So it's not just about innovation and entrepreneurship. Let's put aside the profit motive for a minute and just think about access to healthcare services in rural America. You know, today all of healthcare is getting digitized, and I will be able to maybe in the next 5 to 10 years only access my medical records through the internet. So then what happens when people in rural America have extremely slow mechanisms for access, or they're not able to communicate with their provider through a virtual visit when you're having a flu epidemic out in rural America? So I think those are unintended consequences that we haven't even started thinking about yet.
Yeah, because, I mean, some of the actual patient care is going to happen on the internet.
It's
happening. Yeah. Telecare, a doctor is in Des Moines mm-hmm. and a patient is in rural Iowa, and the two of them connect on a video screen over the internet to figure out what's going on. Yeah. Let's go to the phones again. Anne in Frederick, welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is kind of touched on what you were just talking about. I remember many years ago, the advent of Netflix, Verizon decided that they were using up too much bandwidth and started disrupting the picture, the quality of the photo picture, to get Netflix to pay more money so that they could, get the money that they thought they deserved for the amount of services that Netflix was using. I just think that we've now opened ourselves up to where this could happen more frequently. We have privatized the internet. We have allowed private companies to regulate the content and the flow and where it goes, and I think that's very dangerous. And that's all I have to say.
Well, thanks for the comment, Anne. I mean, so Deb Tillett, you're nodding your head here. I mean, is this going to be one of these situations where we have these behemoths, Comcast or Verizon versus Netflix and Amazon, and individuals are collateral damage?
Oh, I absolutely could foresee that black future. The one thing that strikes me, and we, again, I'm the shallow person, Brandy and Ritu, thanks for bailing me out this whole time. But I go back to the Whopper commercial, and the fun thing about it that we didn't hear in the clip, but it's very representative of what could happen, is the Burger King guy says, Well, we're not selling enough chicken sandwiches, and we're not selling enough of our, you know, new little sandwich. And so that's why we're making the Whopper so hard to get and so expensive, because we're pushing the rest of this trash out there for you. So if you take that analogy a step farther, the stuff that people really want, that's really, you know, just prime time and what they want, they're not going to let you have that anymore, because they're going to push out the stuff that they've invested in that ain't so good and you aren't buying.
So, Brandi Collins, we have an email from Tim who says, please ask your guests if they think Chairman Pai, he's again the chairman of the FCC, would intercede against legislation passed by some states and supported by Comcast, which outlawed cities from building high-speed networks. Where does that stand? Where municipalities themselves would build networks so that people in their towns could have access to the net wherever they were?
Yeah, I mean, I just heard the news today that Montana became, I think, one of the first states to, by governor executive order, put in conditions to uphold net neutrality. And I definitely would love to see that move happening across the country. Would Chairman Pai intervene in that? Probably. I mean, he is a person who says he doesn't really believe in regulation, which I think already makes it questionable why one would be the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission if you didn't. But he has definitely shown a willingness to wield an awful lot of power to dismantle a lot of things that are happening, whether that's prison phone justice or low capping the cost of prison phone calls in different states around the country, whether that's been privacy rules, which he sort of obliterated within his first month in office. And so do I think that he'll do anything he can to carry water for corporations? Probably. But does that mean that we should stop those grassroots efforts? Absolutely not. We should do more of them. Yeah.
And Professor Agarwal, talk about, you alluded to, you know, the impact of this, not just on tech startups, but you gave the example of healthcare. But if you're a person who owns a restaurant, mm-hmm. and the restaurant's in one town, you don't have a chain, you're not Applebee's, you don't have a million restaurants, you just have this one restaurant, or you own a car wash or a nail salon, you own a business that operates solely in a particular community, how does this affect your business and your capacity to do business and attract customers?
It absolutely affects it. You know, one of the first things we teach when we teach classes in innovation and entrepreneurship is that you have to have a web presence so you can be accessed and found regardless of where you are. And, you know, going forward in the 21st century, any business that is not able to advertise or have a web presence is not going to be found. I mean, look at the millennial generation. They do all of their searching on the internet. So regardless of whether you are, you know, in a small rural town or you live in New York City, for any business, in order for it to reach its customers, it has to have a web presence. And let me just make one comment on the earlier discussion that you had about Chairman Pai. You know, the municipality is setting up their own infrastructure directly contradicts his point about there will be no new investment in infrastructure, right, under the net neutrality rules. Because the municipalities realize that it is important, especially in rural America, to start putting in the investments that's necessary for their own communities. And I don't see why they won't be more of that in the future.
We have an email from Mark, and we're going to give Mark the last word because we are out of time. He says, two things. I was an IS manager, information services manager, for a major university in Chicago. First of all, companies already pay more as the access speeds go up. A T1 line is much less expensive than a T5 line, which has more throughput. And secondly, if companies would stop shoving advertisements to my computer, I wouldn't need a higher speed. So we'll leave that as the last word here. And my very deep appreciation to all three of our guests, Brandi Collins, Rita Agarwal, and Deb Tillett. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Brandi Collins is the Senior Campaign Director for Color of Change. Rita Agarwal is Professor and Senior Associate Dean at the Robert H. Smith School of Business at the University of Maryland. And Deb Tillett is the Executive Director of a local startup incubator called ETC. We'll have more on the net at wypr.org/ Midday. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, the Midday Health Watch with Dr. Lena Wen. We'll talk about the effect that the Republican tax plan will have on the Affordable Care Act now that it has eliminated the individual mandate to purchase health insurance. Dr. Wen will take your calls, your comments, and questions. That's coming up on the Health Watch tomorrow. Thanks to the Diz for supplying lunch today. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. They feature signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekends. They're on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. I'm Tom Hall on behalf of the entire Midday team. Appreciate your listening on the radio and on the web. Have a great day.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.